Secret of the Golden Flower.
Oh my God, I just bought some.
Half of that book is a commentary by Carl Jung, and he talks about the chakras, energy body, kundalini and stuff like that. That is a priceless book. And in there you will find, carefully read the translator's foreword, his preface in there.
Okay.
He talks about this priest that suddenly goes off here and there. Yeah, and it has something to do with it. But the Secret of the Golden Flower is about energy work and enlightenment and spiritual development. You have to read it carefully. It's like translated from Chinese. It is not obvious what it's talking about sometimes, but it's an absolutely brilliant piece of work, highly recommended. I've got a copy myself, which I jealously guard from borrowers. But it's worth it for the translator's preface. It's worth it for the little book itself. It's a tiny little book, and it's also well worth it for Carl Jung's commentary on there. If you know Carl Jung had a Kundalini rising experience?
Yes, positive. It was spontaneous, though, he says.
He had a spontaneous Kundalini rise. Here's how it works, Karim Crystal. With Kundalini, as kind of a global thing here, right. Kundalini is a mechanism, an energetic mechanism, built into every human being. It will be stimulated by various things. It can be stimulated by emotional outpourings, emotional work. It can be stimulated through intellectual activity, which in the case of Carl Jung, he was, now keep in mind, he was doing a lot of trance meditation and dream work, and he stimulated this, you could say, through intellectual activity. You know, by pushing your mind right out there and trying to think higher level, you stimulate in your body. You know, it's like you burn your muscles out, and when they burn out, if you really try to do something hard, your muscles will grow stronger, your body will build stronger bones. It has a mechanism inside it which will evolve the physical. But in the intellectual, spiritual level, we have mechanisms in us which, when you really push the envelope, you will trigger. Okay, you're demonstrating a need to your state of being that you need to operate at a higher level of consciousness. That's when you start triggering Kundalini. Now, Kundalini will activate in many different ways, sometimes gently. It's usually the level of Kundalini activation and the way it activates depends a lot upon who you are, what your natural abilities are, what your naturally active chakras are, and what you do. There's like a formula there where you can predict what type of Kundalini awakening you would trigger through energy work and devotional work and prayer and meditation and that. Whereas in my case, I've done early 30s I've done a lot of deep meditation for probably a decade or more before then. And I'd also done a lot of healing. You know, I used to run a few healing centers here and there. It was only the healing and that and the work I'd done which I think saved to me, because I had a very robust heart center and I had a lot of innate stability in me. Depending on how you go about it and what stimulus you provide to that mechanism, it will trigger it in various different ways. You know, nowhere near enough is known about this. It needs to be studied. The Eastern works, I mean, very little is known. You'd have to talk to Eastern masters, who, of course, are sworn on pain of death not to talk about it. They are only allowed to talk about it from... these are passed down from verbally from master to student, and they actually take an oath of, you know, death if they ever release this information. Now, I am not bound by that because I've worked this out for myself, and this is one of the things about enlightenment and that, is you get the download process going, and anything you need to know, it just comes to you. You just get the download, oh, that's what it is. And you start to work with this flow of knowledge that comes down from above, from your higher self. Going back full circuit again here, I want to reiterate here that, you know, your higher self is fully active within you. It's always there. It's never been anywhere else. You only have to ask and to realize this and start working with this. And the more you do that, the more proactive your higher self will become in your life. And that is the secret It's like, you know, like in a religion, you were taught to pray and believe in this, and you're like almost brainwashed to the point where you start to believe what you've been taught from a child. And it's just like Father Christmas, Easter Bunny, and all this and that. You should take it for granted that this is fact. Now, this is one way of instilling basic beliefs in people, which affect your, you know, your beliefs. But, of course, to go beyond that, outside of the framework of the paradigm you're working in, if you want the actual truth, then you've got to start working with yourself, because there is no real exterior source of knowledge that is superior to your own. And the trick is to really evolve, is to get your own download process going. Now, this download process will be very specific to what you're doing. In the case of Tesla, for example, very specific to electrical physics. Now, in the case of Jung, to do with psychology and transpersonal psychology, the other geniuses in the world, including geniuses who were generals of armies who became genius, they had that download process going as well, working your kundalini of their higher self and working in the framework of the beliefs. Because keep in mind, the kundalini of your higher self are morally neutral. They are beyond good and evil. Something that is worth thinking about, that the only way it can be is to be beyond good and evil. Because the one thing I can tell you definitely about God is the same thing I can tell you about the universe. The only maxim, the absolute you can say about the universe is the universe is. And the only thing you can really say about your higher self is your higher self, God, is. And that's the only absolute truth you can state, the two of them.
Wow.
Well, now, if you build on that and you know, following the principles I lay out in the catch basket concept, you generate a set of very strong actual beliefs, because they're based upon personal experience. And this is every master teaches you this. I don't know about how in Islam this applies, but every master teaches you to proceed through personal experience, or at least to build your faith through personal experience. It's a similar thing, but this is where the power comes from. This is where the connection with your higher self grows from, and this is where your connection with the flow and the greater reality comes from personal experience. So in that sense, it is very important spiritual work to manifest a cup of coffee, to manifest a this or that, or to heal your body. Very, very important to do these things, because every time you have a success, your belief grows. Every time you remove a mole from your body or something, or fix something about yourself, your belief grows a little bit. And as you build this belief system muscle, you start to develop a strength and an integrity. And in this sense, put it this way, your higher self / source can only live in the now, and it can only live in absolute truth.
And the truth shall set you free.
Now, the more closely aligned you are to actual truth, the more closely you are aligned to your higher self, the biggest thing that causes the distance, perceived distance, between the higher self and a person, it's almost like the higher self operates at this frequency, which is the frequency of truth and of what is in the now. Now, us humans, we live in a very subjective reality, full of erroneous beliefs and false beliefs and things that we choose to believe and things that we do. And this is very subjective, and this is at a completely different frequency to the frequency, let's say the frequency of normal human life is brown. And this is the frequency of material life in the normal world. But let's say the frequency of the higher self, source, and in truth, is operating at the violet level. There's a big difference in the spectrum between that. So what we have to do is to start cleaning up your mind and your belief system, to removing what is not true. And that includes removing things from yourself which are not authentic. and starting to know yourself. Okay, how can you know God if you don't know yourself? If you want to know God, you need to know yourself. Your closest and most intimate contact with Source and your most accessible area of Source is within your own body and mind and your life. There is nothing, there is no spiritual place, there is no holy man or enlightened being out there in whose presence you could be possibly any closer than you already are. And this is why when you clean your belief systems and you start to go within and you start to face your actual self, this is when you start to know God, which is within you. And there is no other way. Every enlightened person in the world before us has learned this and known this, but maybe they haven't been very good at putting it in words. I am to be a modern day mystic that has no training and very few paradigms imposed upon it. I think about these things and I think about how I can put it into words. And it is very, very simple. It is not complicated. Any child can understand this better than any adult. You give me a 7-year-old or a 5-year-old, they will understand exactly what I'm talking about. But every adult they know will be busily steering their beliefs and into consensus reality, the local religions and beliefs, and this is how we do things here, and this is what those people are like. And stay away from those people because they're nasty. They're mostly left-handed and they walk funny. And you notice the eyes are close together. That means they're really nasty, evil people. Stay away from them, you know? And all of this crap, absolute crap that we pick up. Now, none of this is truth. And we wonder why we have this illusion of separation from God, Source, and our higher selves. It's because we have distanced ourselves because it suits us. Because it's comfortable, we like this, and we have to fit in. And, you know, if we don't do it, we're going to get stoned or fed to the lions or something. What happens, happens. I mean, you don't have to shout this from the rooftop. You can keep these things to yourself quietly, you know, whatever is politically correct. You know, a wise saying, when in Rome, do as Romans do. I will happily go into any church, a Jehovah's Witness church, a synagogue, a mosque, a Catholic church, whatever, or sit down with a First Nations tribe and partake in peace pipe ceremonies, which I've done. I would sit down happily in there because in any of these paradigms, I see the light trying to shine through. And it's always there, and I focus on the light. I don't care whether we have to sip this wine or hold this pipe or say these words, we are all there looking at the same light. We're just looking at it from slightly different angles, through slightly different filters. But the light is the light. There is only one sun. And we all share the same sun. We all share the same universe. And when you start to think like this, our petty differences between religions, cultures, and even between ourselves and our spouses and our friends, these little petty differences, they're really quite, you know, if you can take yourself to a higher level looking at it, you smile, and it's like a grandparent smiling at, you know, these very small children, their grandchildren, squabbling over little things, you know, squabbling over who's going to be Superman today. Or that I'm better than you because, you know, I can jump higher. Or all these little things. And at a higher level, our higher selves absolutely smile at what we do on this planet. Like a very wise grandparent smiling at their naughty little children. But knowing also in that smile is knowing that those children will grow up one day. And guess what? The grandparent is there to offer a word, give an example, teach a lesson, tell a story, and to help them to grow up. And children go off and want to do it their own way, and they make mistakes, and they get hurt, and they hurt other people, and they eventually come back to the grandparent, and they suddenly they're open-eyed and they want to learn about this and they learn about that and then they go away. And all through the development of those children, the grandparents and the parents are there offering helping hands, advice, and trying to steer them towards the light. It's really quite wonderful, life, and it has a beauty to it. Everything, keep clearly in mind here, everything in this world is absolutely perfect the way it is. And do you know what that is demonstrable? If you look at Source, God, the highest of the high, the holiest of the holiest, is God, Source, capable of making a mistake? Do you think us mere mortals here and humans are capable of going against God's will? Or doing something that wasn't intended? That we do, that we grow through? I mean, if God is Source, is perfect, which it is, as I believe, and everything on this world must by default also be perfect. I delight when Jehovah's Witnesses knock on my door and, no offense, Crystal. They're trained to do this in sales techniques and that, and they start off trying to get you to say yes, and they say, oh, isn't the world in a terrible state today? And I say, no, I don't think so. And they say, oh, that terrible war, isn't that horrible? I say, no, I don't think it's horrible. Oh, about this and the pollution and that. No, I think it's wonderful. Well, what is that? They start twitching about this point. And, and then I say, well, I take them for a course. Do you believe that God is perfect? And they say, oh, yes. Do you believe that everything God creates is perfect? Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, including humanity. Yes, and everything in the world also created perfect. And if we were doing something which was against God's will, God would instantly change that because God is the creator of this universe. With infinite power to change anything instantly. It creates the universe, God. So therefore, if you say God cannot make a mistake, God is perfect, then life is also perfect. With all its, dirty feet and smelly armpits and bad eyesight and all these things, it is still a beautiful world because everything here, all these what we perceive as bad things, which are there to be overcome and grown from and learned from, all these wonderful lessons, including the oil companies, are there in our society, and they are the soil in which we will grow to become greater and wiser beings in the fullness of time.
Right.
Damn, I can talk. Sorry, I get into a zone when I'm talking, and this is what I do all the time. This is who I am. I mean, 24/7, this is what you get with me. I mean, this fascination with how things work, with how people work, and why we're doing that. Is there a better way? What's happening there? The exploration of relationships and consciousness and the subconscious and all of that is a wonderful voyage of discovery. And I take great delight in it. Whether I'm talking to my hamster, and I absolutely talk to my hamster and my cat, and they talk to me and I hear them. I feel like a regular John Doolittle sometimes. I pick up impressions from them and impressions and feelings, and I clairvoyantly see memories and images in their head. And you can, when you open yourself to it, it's very easy to communicate with a little animal, any animal.
That's me. But with her, with her meowing.
It's a lot more difficult to communicate with a human being than it is to with an animal.
Yeah, I agree on that.
We think that we are so superior, and that our love is special in our relationships and the romantic myth and all that.
I'm gonna have to send you a picture of my dog.
Well, I'll tell you what, friends, listen to this. Any dog that you bond with, if you bond with a dog will teach you something about love, because a dog is capable of loving at a much more intense level than a human being is capable of loving another human being. If you, as an extreme example here, if you were bonded with an animal that you loved and that loved you, if you came home intoxicated or drugged or possessed one night, and you beat that animal to within an inch of its life and broke almost every bone in its body, with its last strength, it will crawl to your side and lick your hand and look adoringly into your eyes as it dies. Now that is love, my friends. That's real love. Not this romantic myth that we have created here in the human world. And in that sense, you talk about soulmates. You'll find that comes up quite often. Soulmates?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Every person out there has the potential to be your soulmate. Take a person off the street, a complete stranger. If both of you, if a couple of people are capable of self-reflection and growth and introspection and looking at themselves and learning, you can grow to become each other's soulmate, because you will find in each other what is in yourself. And when you start to find that, you will find that love and that caring grows to a point where you become a part of each other. And you can then say that this is my soulmate, because we're so connected. And if you have truth behind that, an actual love and actual compassion and friendship, deep friendship there as well, you have your soulmate. Now, it takes two people to do this. It doesn't happen automatically, and you don't just find it in a romantic haze somewhere. Because how many times do you hear the word soulmate being used, and then a few months later you hear they broke up and they're dating somebody else?
That's true.
This is the flaky, contemporary, feel-good New Age movement, which is a lot more like a health spa than it is in a spiritual movement. Because, the words demon and evil spirit have been banned. I get torn to shreds if I use the word demon. I have to be very politically correct. I try to be. Because people like wince and want to leave the room if I use the word negative spirit. They say, oh, there are no evil spirits. They don't exist. Whenever I hear that, I see an ostrich with its head buried in the sand while this hungry lion approaches, drooling from behind. That ostrich is going to get reamed so many ways. But it's smiling there. We're not listening. No, it's all quiet and nice down here in the sand. Okay. Yeah. Now, back in the real world, we have to deal with things like tigers and that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel actually a little bit lucky that I had to deal with that pretty closely to the time that I began. Nothing serious, but, I was very naive in thinking that I was protected.
Yeah, a lot of people are, and they get bent out of shape. They have a belief that they are protected by their guides and guardian angels, whatever. I mean, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. But if you look at everything is of source, angels and demons are opposing forces in this world. Negative spirits, good spirits, positive spirits, and all the range between that are morally neutral. You know, it is the interaction with these things, and which we come across circumstantially, largely hereditary, passed down through family lines. There is a beauty in this. There is an evolutionary mechanism at work here. For example, you take a family line, and down through the generations, hundreds of years go by, certain members of that family line, as it spreads out, as people marry and have families of their own, certain members have bad experiences, they'll become evil, they'll become murderers and rapists and robbers, and they become drunks and drug addicts and evil people. And they also kill people and they get cursed by other people. And over a long period of time, you pick up a collection of negative entities, hereditary ghosts, including earthbound spirits or ancestors that don't move on. And over a period, as the family line comes down, you find a pressure builds up in it. The negative hereditary attachments in a family line will either destroy the family line, or it will force somebody along the lines of that family line. It will force somebody to evolve. A person will be born and they will suffer. So somebody in that family line, like myself, be exposed to all this hereditary demonology and stuff and curses and that. And sometimes you get a person that pushed to the point for all this hell, that they are actually forced to evolve. And when a person evolves and becomes enlightened, that resets that part of the family line and a new bloodline is created from that moment.
That's very interesting what you're saying.
It's spiritual evolution is tied in with the origin of species, of how, if you look at the spiritual life, you can compare it to how species evolves on this planet. The dominant paradigms and how things, mutations, change, evolve, and until you find, a parrot grows an extra long beak and therefore it survives because it can reach deeper into the coconut and get more food. All the short-beaked parrots die off, and that's the long-beaked parrot that's a mutation is the only parrot that has the strength left to fight off the other males and breed. So you find over a period of time the short-beaked parrots die off and only the long-beaked parrots exist. You can apply natural selection directly to spiritual evolution in an individual life and in a family life.
Well, I just wanted to ask you something that's sort of related to that. Is the consciousness of the planet as a whole, does this affect what the individual is capable of?
Planets have a consciousness. I mean, even a rock, you pick up a stone off the road, it has some level of consciousness in it because it is made, the rock you're holding in your hand is composed of source energy. All physical matter is composed of source energy. It is a manifestation of source energy in the physical dimension, which we perceive as a solid reality. But a planet, of course, is a much larger, higher. It is very much like a person. It has, well, if you look at it, it has a heart, it has a circulatory system, it has an aura, but it has a consciousness which is very, very different to what we would perceive as consciousness. It's difficult to recognize. It's like a storm having a consciousness and trying to communicate with it. It's very, very different. It is a very powerful consciousness, but it's very different. The sun, probably the most powerful source of consciousness in our universe, because it is the source of all of the energy in our solar system. On a consciousness level, I don't know what the limit is, Crystal, but of evolution, but we evolve, and as we evolve, Source evolves along with us and learns with us. It is difficult to understand what that is, and I'm always very hesitant to go into cosmology, because once you start doing that, you can fall into error. And if you have any kind of a false cosmology of how the universe works, you start slipping into the untruth, and you start slipping into the brown frequency again. You start moving towards that. Now, the idea is to create as accurate a truth as we can live and conceive of. And even if that means we have to say three little words that people don't like saying, is, well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, Crystal. I really don't know. I can hypothesize that, all of this fits together somehow if you look at the universe as a whole, but go out there at night and look at the sky and look at the stars. I don't need to explain that. I can't. It is infinite. Scientists, astronomers cannot agree whether there is a limit to the edge of the universe, which supports the Big Bang theory, or whether the universe actually goes on infinitely forever. They don't know that because we don't have instruments that can measure that far. I mean, no matter how sensitive the instruments, they can only measure so far. It might be a billion light years, but it has an end to it. And if you don't run out of galaxies at the end spectrum of your devices, then you can't find the edge. So we've got to create a comfortable theory. It's like the Big Bang Theory. Familiar with the Big Bang Theory?
Yes, of course.
Now physicists know an awful lot about the physical universe and how it works, down to the subatomic level. They can tell you an awful lot about what happened in the universe a millisecond after the Big Bang, but they cannot tell you anything about what happened at the moment of the Big Bang or before that. They have no idea. They are clueless. I am as accurate as any physicist in the world when I say what happened is Source stood up and said, let there be light. And there was light. And you could see for bloody miles.
Mm.
I'm joking, my father's there.
Well, actually, something I wanted to ask you. We have a new passport that was issued by the country, and we can only get it by going back home. And both my passport and my father's is actually expiring. And I'm trying to convince him as much as I can not to visit them, but I can't tell him, don't visit your mother, don't visit your brothers and sisters. I actually said those words, but he said, you know, bugger off, what do you know, I'm going to visit my family whether you like it or not. You don't have to. I'm really, really worried because, I mean, I don't want to say they're demons or they're the devil, but they kind of are. And I'm not really sure, like, what can I do when I go there?
I think it's a very good idea that you go along their career with your father. Keeping in mind here, your father knows these people very well. He knows how to function and interact with them and how to hold his own with them. Now, I think this will be an invaluable lesson for you, a quest, if you like, which is being placed upon, which is being offered to you by life. Life is offering this to you, and you feel the need to go along and protect your father. Now, your father probably doesn't need protecting. He's probably quite capable of interacting with these people, their family, and, you know, visiting with them. He knows how to handle them. This is a good exercise for you in authenticity and how to maintain your energy, how not to take anything personally, how to authentically reflect what is happening around you kindly and considerately, and how to learn from these people. Now, while you are there, if you can do anything to help restore peace in your family and good feelings and good relationships, if there are any bad feelings or curses coming from that area of the family, they can be diffused at the source, which is highly recommended when you're dealing with curses. I mean, people may have paid a witch to put a curse on your family or something like that, and that curse may still be active. Whereas if you go back and make peace with these people, and, I mean, take them presents, give them a nice, thoughtful gift, and give it from the heart, something like that, and be generous and forgiving and loving to them, you know, without allowing yourself to be pulled into their dramas and their controls. Maintain your integrity. You can spread a little bit of light in that family while you are there. You don't have to preach to them or anything. Just be nice, be authentic, and not take anything personally, and also don't allow yourself to be manipulated or influenced. And you will find you can help. This is like a diplomatic mission of the soul.
Yeah.
And it is a quest. Now, while you are there, you can use prayer and intention just by not reacting. You can just be there for your father, you know, just let him talk and, you know, just, you know, not react. Don't contribute to any flames that may arise in him. If he gets angry, if he gets pulled into their dramas, that is his business. But you can be there for him and you can listen. You don't have to take a part in that. And you find you could probably turn that into a wonderful experience and reconnect with your roots there at a certain level, at a level and a way of your own choosing.
Fair enough. Well, thanks. You kind of give me a different angle on this trip. So I'll take that to heart. I'll definitely approach it from that end.
I'm connecting with you here. I think that will be very beneficial for you. And see, life has brought this task to you, this journey, this quest to you. It's just appeared there. And you, being who you are, it's going to be difficult for you to get out of in yourself. You're going to want to be there. And you need to do your passport anyway. So while you're there, you know, go along with your father, have a meal with this family, you know, listen to their stories, let them talk, you know, and smile. People love to talk, Karim. Let them tell their stories about where they came from, encourage them to talk, and that way you don't have to talk to them. You don't need to have an opinion about anything. You can just be there and smile. When I'm in a situation like that, I dumb myself down a fair bit, and I act like, oh, really, I didn't know that. I act like I don't really know. And then they have the pleasure of instructing me. And I smile, and they tell me their stories, and I learn, and I share. And you end up, people feel very kindly towards you if you've allowed them to share, and you've listened to their stories. And stories are an important thing. And, you know, when you share your story and someone listens politely, and I mean really listens, shows interest, something happens between you. There's a lot of healing occurs in listening to each other's stories. Even if people are talking bullshit and they've got their political views, they're trying to ram down your throat and this and that, you can smile and say, oh, really, I didn't know that. You don't have to join anything or do anything. You just smile and let them talk. And people will love you, and you've hardly said a word.
Yeah.
You can grow a lot from this. And, yeah, I'm quite excited for you at the prospect of that. I think you're going to find it to be a wonderful experience. Regardless of how it plays, it'll certainly test you, my friend. And we all need testing. I mean, you can learn and spiritually practice in a cave or a quiet room and not have anything to do with people. And you can get all these really good things happening and fill yourself with love and understanding. But you get out there in the real world, 5 minutes later, most mystics that choose that path, give them a couple of days in the real world and they're losing their temper and they're doing this and doing that. And all of their spiritual paradigm structure crumples because they can't handle real people. Now, to really develop, truly develop in a very balanced way, we need to learn how to live in this world. Then you can become a peaceful island like the eye of a hurricane. And wherever you go, there's peace around you and people will feel better. And if you maintain your energies, people will just feel this nice, peaceful energy around you and they'll like to be around you. I mean, even if you don't really like them, I mean, you can choose not to spend more time than you need to, than duty calls, with a person because you don't like being around them.
It's not only that I don't like being around them. It's I could tolerate them, sure. But the thing that bothers me most about them is that a couple of the people in the house have been dabbling with black magic for quite a long time, and that really bothers me. That's the most thing that bothers me more than their personality or their issues or any of that. And they actually actively deal with a witch doctor and do stuff with people's drinks and everything.
On a safety level here, keeping in mind that all of these people are a part of you, a part of your host, part of you. They are all a part of you. These people are other youths, you know, that have had different lives to live and they develop differently. But in a magical sense, what you need to do is to be very, very careful about that you do not leave anything there of yourself. You need to be very careful with your items of clothing, your haircut, hair clippings, loose hair, hairbrushes, combs, anything, of any part of your physical body, you need to fairly jealously guard it along with any of your real possessions, but don't take anything with you which you really care about, like that is like don't wear any jewelry that is really you really care about, because if it goes missing, it's been imbued with your energy that could be used against you, magically speaking. Hair clippings and blood, particularly blood, and you know, a magical person will try to get a hair sample. One strand of hair, a magician can do a lot with that, but it, you know. I mean, have a nice haircut before you go there. Get your hair cut nice and short. I don't have that area. I shave my head. But I'm not suggesting you do, but, yeah.
No, I cut it very short anyways, so, yeah.
Well, keep it short and trimmed, and just be careful you don't leave any bodily fluids or hair or anything like that around where anybody can possibly get it. It's just a matter of being very, very clean, little things like that. And, of course, being careful about what you eat and drink, of course, is coming out of the communal pot sort of thing. If you're given something to eat or drink and you are suspicious about it, you can always claim to be allergic to a particular substance, or you can say, I've got a toothache, it's really hurting, I can't drink any cold fluids or hot or sweet. It might be a sweet meal or drink. You say, I can't eat that, I've got a toothache or something. Come up with a believable excuse. Believable bullshit, I call it.
Yeah. No, I'm okay in that department, don't worry. I'll try that. But I actually thought of staying in a hotel, actually, and just visiting them. And I'll pay for it, so that way my dad won't have to think, you know, oh, you know, we're spending a lot of money or anything. So, because I feel like he shouldn't sleep in their house. That's all.
What does he want to do? You think he would rather stay in a hotel or rather stay with them?
No, he'll probably want to stay with them, but I'm kind of like... But I think I can convince him not to. So,
well, if he doesn't stay with them, I mean, I think it would be a good idea if you stayed in the hotel, because that would give you a little bit of space. And you could claim that you have work to do and you need internet and you need these services and you need to do work. So you're visiting here now, you're sharing dinner, now I've got to get back, I've got a business meeting on the computer and it's back at my hotel and... You know, whatever. You can make up some believable excuses, which probably have a bit of truth in them. But as far as the people there, if you can identify the people that perform magic, one thing with if a person is dabbling in magic, be very careful what gifts you accept from them. And also, it's a good idea if you buy them a particularly nice gift to make them feel nicely towards you. And also, you know, if you lower your level of presence and aggression there, they look upon you as being harmless, not worth their effort. Keep a low profile, if you know what I mean. There's an art to doing that and still maintaining your integrity. For example, I was given a gift by a witch, which was the feather of a spotted owl, and it was magically charged, and I didn't realise that at the time because I put it in my bag, took it home, and put it above my desk. And now, I didn't realize then that that was actually a death spell attached to that. And my witchcraft is very subtle. It's difficult to detect unless you know what you're doing. This one caught me from the side. And my health deteriorated quite significantly over the next 18 months, 2 years, to the point where in early January I almost died from ill health. It was only for a very big effort of like reconnecting with my higher self and actually walking the walk that I pulled myself out of that. My health is now flourishing again and my body's repairing. But I identified the feather when I found it. I burned it. And then I found another owl's feather, which was given to me by a witch 2 years earlier. And they were like, I said, what? I've already burned that. And it's another one given to me by another witch. And then I actually had a conversation with a converted black witch who was a satanic witch. She's converted and went back to the church. And I ran by her and she said, yeah, the owl feathers are used. The owl is a sacred animal and they capture it and kill it ritually. And the feathers are made as to contain a death spell, which affect your health and your luck. So anyway, the general rule is if a person... studying magic or witchcraft, it's a good idea not to accept a gift from them, or if you, for political reasons, have to accept the gift, you dispose of that gift as quickly as possible, because the gift can't be magically charged. The general rule is don't let them get a sample of you, try not to let them get a photograph of you alone, a whole body photograph, and... and avoid accepting gifts. And if you are given anything that from a person who does magic or you think does magic, then dispose of it. Give it away or destroy it or bury it. And when you do, say a prayer over it that if anything is attached to this, you know, please let it return to the sender, which is a very reasonable thing to do because that provides a true reflection of magic. If somebody wishes you harm, if you refuse that and send that force back to where A force like that needs to be grounded. If it cannot find a ground through you, it will float around, it may attack other people. So the honourable thing to do is to return it with a simple prayer, affirmation, some intention, just to send it back, make up whatever words you mean and intend, whatever's with it, to go back to whomever sent it. And it will ground through them. Now, their health may suffer, but that is their karma. It is not, you know, they created that situation.
True. Wow, thanks a lot.
Feel free to keep in touch with me, and if you get come under any attack or whatever there, I can help with that sort of thing.
Sure, thanks a lot. I really appreciate this.
You're most welcome. Why I recorded this for was just for practice, actually. But some of the pieces in there, when I start getting a download and talking about things, I sometimes speak inspirationally, and I like to capture some of those things that I was talking about. I may or may not use them, but I'll send you a copy of it when I've edited it.
I'd love you to send me one too. I learned a lot today, actually.
Yeah, same.
Oh, cool.
I know I haven't been talking much because I'm just in kind of a weird place right now, but I'm definitely taking it all in.
I understand, yeah. You always were a bit weird, but I can relate to that because I'm a bit... Crystal, I am the weirdest person that I know.
I don't know. I'm the weirdest person that I know, so...
Well, we obviously have a lot in common. I'm sure... Karim, I'm sure that where you come from, you'd be considered really weird.
Oh, no idea.
We always talk about that, about how weird it is, you know, so just some woman from Florida and some guy from Dubai. And wouldn't I be like the strangest little thing over there? Like, and it would be strange over here. People would be like, who the hell is this guy? It's just so funny.
I know, yeah. I know.
Well, you're going to love it, though, because, I mean, this is like what do you call it? There's an Australian, an American, Arabic? Dubai,
yeah.
Is it Arab? And
yeah,
an Arab.
It's an Arab country. Yeah.
What a mixture. All we need is an Irishman.
Well, you add an Irishman to anything and it's laughs, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, this is very, yeah, very multicultural and that, but this is how it should be in life, in real life, how it can be. We're all the same. I mean, if we each open a vein, red blood comes out of us. We're all the same. I mean, we might speak different languages and have different cultures, but, I mean, hey, there's more similarities than there are differences.
True.
Anyway, on that note, I will leave you and we'll talk to you later. Lovely talking to you guys.
You too, Robert.
Same here.
Thank you so much.
Same here.
God bless. Bye.